Hello and welcome to the PopBreak.com's official Oscars podcast, hosted by Marissa Carpico and Matt Taylor.
This is Matt Taylor, podcaster at The Pop Break. I'm joined, as always, by the film editor of The Pop Break, my co-host, Marissa Carpico. Say hi, Marissa.
Hello.
And we are here for one of our mini-sodes as part of the Way Too Early Oscar podcast, our countdown to the 95th Oscars. This is our best documentary breakdown, hopefully a quick and dirty one, as you like to say, for getting for some of these five pretty good movies to talk about. I think, not gonna lie, it was a pretty strong year for documentaries, I think. And the nominees are All That Breathes, All the Beauty in the Bloodshed, Fire of Love, A House Made of Splinters, and Navalny. I might be mispronouncing that really bad. I just watched it this week, but hopefully that's fine. Let's just dive right into it. All That Breathes. This follows two siblings who rescue and treat injured birds in India amidst a pollution and other environmental issues that are injuring the bird life in New Delhi. I've been joking to my friends that 2023 is the year that Matt gets smart, because I'm trying to make a more conscious effort to read more, including more nonfiction and listen to more podcasts and things like that. And I have learned in the past few months that I am really into nature and environmental science and things like that, which is very funny if you know what my day job is, and because it's like, oh, this makes sense. And this is what I found it so thrilling. I really loved all the nature footage it's able to get. I was so riveted by watching them try to fix, like, you know, the bird life problem, like the way it depicts how, you know, the environmental issues weigh on their day-to-day life, as well as the day-to-day lives of animals. It has really thoughtful cinematography, I believe, in the way, like, it will focus on animals, not just birds, and, like, capture so much emotion in their movements and in just, you know, watching them go about their, I guess, business, for lack of a better word, as animals in this environment. I found it really fascinating and really interesting, and very in line with my recent interest, as I've learned. And I really loved it. And at 90 minutes, I found that, like, for some of it is somewhat minimalist in its structure, in just that, you know, it's not telling as much of a story as the other four documentaries are. I think at 90 minutes, it's sort of like the perfect length for me to, like, where I was, just as I was starting to say, like, okay, I think I've seen enough, like, it started winding up. So, I really like this one quite a bit. What are your thoughts on this one, Marissa?
Yeah, it's a real slow build to its ultimate point, because it's at first it's just like, will they be able to keep doing this? Is it soul-crushing work, or, like, self-defeating or something, or, like, impossible to, like, there's just too many birds falling out of the sky. It's a little... it's very delicate. I think it's a little, it's maybe a touch slow for me, but it's a compelling subject at least. And I did like its ultimate point, even though I think it was one of the last ones I watched for this. And I think, unfortunately, that worked against it, because I think a lot of the other ones are just make a bigger, louder impact.
Yeah, it is. This is a year where, like, three of these documentaries, I would say, are, like, insane heavy hitters of, like, just,
yeah,
like, emotional wallop, or just, like, holy shit wallop, basically. Speaking of, I one of the ones that really hit me hardest let's talk about All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. Do you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a
documentary about the artist Nan Golden, who is a photographer, an activist now. A lot of the film is sort of looking at her life in the early like queer scene in New York City, and like underground art scene, and the way the art, those experiences have like intersected and now push her activism, basically, like fighting for queer people and really just fighting for like, I mean, she basically like plays chicken with a bunch of major museums and is like, get rid of these people who, the names of these people who funded prescription drugs that have killed people and made them addicted and made her addicted at one point, or you can't show my stuff. And then it's quite incredible. And like, it's a lot going on, but it never feels like too much. It's presented so beautifully, so efficiently, and it's just, it's sprawling, but it's like never uninteresting or overwhelming. It's very candid. She's in it a lot, doing like describing her life at the time. She talks about like a partner who abused her and like the photos and the way she turned that into art. And it's, I don't know, it's, I was really taken with it. I guess it was the first one I saw after the nominations had been announced. And I was like, Jesus, how the hell is anything going to beat this? It's incredible.
Yeah, it blew me away. This is like almost like exactly what I want from a documentary, basically, of like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm constantly learning something new, but also having a huge emotional impact on me. And in a way, it's almost two distinct documentaries, because you can have a whole movie just about her life as this artist who had a fascinating, very distressing home life, and then you know, coming through, like, out as this artist in the queer, like, you know, in a major part of queer history, and like living through all these really incredible moments, and then battling a drug addiction. Like, all these things are like, her life is just so fascinating, where it'd be a compelling documentary on its own. And she herself is such a compelling figure to be like the forefront of it. But then you also have it tied in with the way it touches on how much of a hand the Sackler family has in the art community, and the importance of, you know, fighting for what you believe to be right on the political stage in, you know, in your art, like using your platform as an artist to demand justice and things like that. It's very well done. It works on so many levels, and I found it so compelling. And yeah, I saw it early, like I saw it before the Oscar nominations were announced, and I remember sitting there and being like, well, nothing's topping this, basically. Like, it's like, it is just such a powerful documentary, and I was so impressed by it. Really, really, really well done. Let's talk next about Fire of Love. Do you want to introduce this one as well? Or
Yeah, sure. We were supposed to see it together, but I think you were moving at the time, so you had to cancel, and I ended up seeing it alone. But it is the true story of this. It's basically all archival footage and like voiceovers, but there are no like traditional talking heads. But it's about this couple who were like basically volcanologists, this French couple, and they just chased volcanoes and learned about them, and learned about like which ones are really dangerous and which ones you're not so dangerous. They're all dangerous, but like one of them is like the blow up ones are very bad. The grays versus the reds, I think they call it at some point. I was very excited to see it because I think the trailer is like incredible. But I don't know. I think I was a little disappointed in it when I eventually did see it, because the structure just felt a little too meandering and like all over the place. I just wish maybe it had like a stronger chronology. Like you know, on some level, I think what makes the All the Beauty and the Bloodshed such a like clear experience is that it is largely chronological in Nan Golden's life, even though it's like inserting things that are like relevant at the time, you know, or that connect to the current history. But this one just felt a little too scattered, and it's a shame because there's incredible footage in it. Because these people film themselves doing all this crap, so they're just like getting in a big old foil suit and then being like poking at lava, you know, it's crazy. So it's very beautiful to look at and sort of like awe-inspiring in the sort of you know, power of nature way. But I don't know, I just every time I think of it, I just wish it had stuck in my head a little more.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing, I don't know if you saw it, but it was just enough that the film is getting a dramatic, sorry, what was that?
A Criterion release, I was going to say. No, guess not.
No. A dramatic release, a dramatic remake. It's becoming, like, it's going to, Fox Searchlight, or whatever they're called now, is doing a film adaptation of it, like, as a drama film. And the fight, at first I was like, oh, do we need that? But then I was thinking, like, the footage is so incredible, and it looks so amazing on its own. But yeah, it is a sort of thing where, like, it is also this romance, and I just never, in the same way, like, where, like, all the Beauty and the Bloodshed, I was so invested in Nan Golden's life. I was never, like, I never particularly cared about these people beyond, like, oh, this is fascinating footage, and, like, it's an interesting human interest story that they are a couple. And I'm like, maybe a dramatic film is what we need to, like, sell the like it as this romance. But I mean, also maybe that's just me bullshitting now to take a face on the podcast, because you know, I had fun with it. I think it's good. I think it is quite easily my least favorite of these five, which is saying something. I do think it is good.
No, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it just it's the one that, you know, it stuck with me the least, and I'm very happy I saw it. Very happy I saw it on a big screen. It looked beautiful. But yeah, this is a year of heavy hitter documentaries, and this one just was not like a heavy hitter. We'll talk about heavy hitters next. House Made of Splinters, one of the most devastating movies I've ever watched. And the sort of thing where I was like, I liked it. I don't know if I could recommend it with, like, a good, like recommend people. Because it is the sort of thing where I was, like, I thought about how, like, if this story was, like, a 60 Minutes news piece, it would be incredibly compelling. Blown up to, like, a 90-minute movie, it really does feel punishing at points. But it is unquestionably so well made and really impressive. And this is another one from this year. You've heard us mention this throughout the series. Some of these you really had to like race to see, because, and this is one where I really thought, like, I was just not sure I'm not going to be able to see it, because it just never seemed to be playing. It was not available to rent, and at last minute it became available, and I was so happy I was able to see it, because I think it's really well done. It follows a Ukrainian adoption or orphanage, essentially, for children whose parents are addicts and cannot take care of them. And so these children are being taken care of while their parents, you know, ideally are receiving treatment. And it just sort of follows around a collection of these children and the social workers there. And what it is, like, the footage is able to capture, like I don't know how they made it, I guess, but I would believe that, like, these camera people are not very far from these children. And I just think, like, these children must just not care about performing for a camera, because it almost is as if the camera's not there. Like, it's like these children are just interacting, and it's so, it feels so natural and so organic. And the footage they're able to get of these kids is incredible. And the way it is able to explore, you know, the way their trauma might have impacted them, and in some ways their resilience, but also in some ways the idea that, like, unfortunately for a lot of people, this sort of trauma is, like, cyclical, and many of these kids might deal with the same issues that their parents deal with now as adults. And like, without any judgment, it just shows though, like, these children's lives and all these incredible, you know, very complex themes, but so simply without ever over communicating things. And it is very powerful. It is very depressing. There are the occasional, light moments. Feels almost like I'm pretty too much. Like, it's like I'm exaggerating, but there are some very heartwarming moments where you see these children and how resilient they might be to the trauma around them. But I found it so powerful and so effective, and the sort of perfect way, the sort of perfect platform that a movie like this can get from an Oscar nomination, because I had never heard of it before nomination morning. And you and I follow these races pretty closely. And when they announced it, I was like, oh, that's random. And, I hope a lot of people check it out, even though it is sad, because it is the sort of thing where I'm like, it absolutely deserves to be seen. What do you think about it, Marissa?
Yeah, I don't think it hit me as hard as you did. It clearly hit you. I mean, it's rough. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's terrible to watch. I think it's definitely worth seeing. I would recommend it. It is really heavy and it's fascinating. It's just the way it's making the way it makes its point about those cycles of abuse and addiction is incredible, honestly. But there are light moments in it. It's fascinating. It's these kids, I think you're right. It's the camera isn't even there, because those kids must have gotten so comfortable with those filmmakers, because they never feel like they're performing for the camera or anything like that. Even a scene that could be like that, where there's a young girl, I think her name is Sasha, and she's playing with a doll that responds to prompts and stuff, and she just starts fucking with it actually. And then eventually when it starts responding to her, she's like, what if I'm not your friend ever, and I just leave you, and the doll says something positive about that, and she was like, okay, now you're, I think she actually says now you're fucking with me to the doll. So it's very funny in moments, but in the way that children are fun. There's a scene that I really liked where it's very early on, when the girls leave a love note in the boys' room and they're all giggling, and then all of a sudden whatever the boy that they give the note to does not react well, and a girl just comes out of the room crying and slamming doors, and I'm like, wow, what a Proust Madeleine of young womanhood. I don't know, it really gets kids right. It just understands children and friendships, and I don't know, there were things that got me about it. There's that Sasha has that little friend Alma that they basically imprint upon each other, and I was like, oh my god, this is I can't handle this. Jesus Christ. <Yeah. laughs> This is brutal. But it is fascinating, because it could feel meandering or it's just sitting around, but the constant trauma and the way it's going to affect these children forever is constantly there. The scene that really got me, that I was like, how the fuck is that real? There is a scene where some of the kids are playing, and one of the girls is pretending to be a fortune teller. And
oh my god,
my god, Sasha's little friend Alma walks in, and some of the other ones are nice, you're gonna be a princess or whatever, but this girl literally is just like, your mom is never gonna come back, you're gonna get adopted, but someday you'll be back, your kids will be back here. And it's like, fuck, man, because that's the question that the movie is asking is the movie is sort of saying these things do happen. There's a teacher in it or one of the people who works there, who's sometimes people come back and they're like, hey, do you remember me? And they're like, oh, and she's like, of course I remember you. And it just kills me. And it's that shit blew my mind. That scene was unbelievable. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I barely recovered from it. I was just like, how do we keep going? It's like, I just couldn't believe that existed. But mm-hmm. It's just incredible. It's incredible what this film does.
It's out of this world. I cannot believe how well done it is. It's really, really good. I'm happy we were able to see it. Finally, would you want to introduce Navalny, whatever it's called?
I think it's Navalny. That's the way I've been saying it. We're not sticklers for pronunciation on this podcast. It's brilliantly constructed. What incredible footage. It basically follows this politician who... was poisoned in Russia for being, against Putin, essentially. And it's sort of this, like, it's like a, it's a picture of this guy, but also it's a sort of an investigative piece because they're trying to figure out who poisoned him, even though they kind of know. And then they just basically, like, run these tricks where they trick people into revealing the poison plot. It's shocking, actually. There's a scene with a phone call, well, a series of phone calls where they're, like, trying to get someone to incriminate themselves that I genuinely could not believe it exists. It's so explosive, frankly, this, like, what is being happening on screen. And it could turn into hero worship, but I think the movie is smart to question Navalny occasionally. Like, there's a scene where they're like, okay, bro, like, you, what about the Nazis? Because there are, like, Nazis who are, like, you know, yeah, like, siding with Navalny. And he's like, well, I'm not going to push anybody away from my coalition. And you're like, what? And it just, like, lets that stand. It doesn't, like, you know, try to make him seem good after that or something. It's just like, yeah, he's fine with that. And it's like, whoa. So I don't know. I think it's a smart film in that it's like giving you a picture of someone that they clearly think is a good, like, a good figure, but also being like, listen, he's not without his issues. Yeah, it's really something. It's very, like, tense and compelling. Certainly one I'll never forget. I mean, that phone call scene is really jaw-dropping.
Yeah, my main takeaway from it was I was like, first of all, I was like, why don't I remember any of this happening? And I granted,
no kidding.
It was during the pandemic, so, like, we were all busy. But, like, it was the sort of thing where I was just like, holy shit, this is the phone call scene you're mentioning. I was watching it, and, like, by myself, and I was like, oh my God, like, out loud. Like, I was just like, this is insane. It's incredible footage that, and, like, really great investigative work. And yeah, you're totally right. It's like, it is the exact what I think you kind of need a political documentary to be at this point, where it's like, actually, it's questioning the person who it is about just as much as it is. Yeah, like, cause, you know, it has this incredible footage of Navalny as, like, at home with his family. You know, they're talking about his political opinions and everything like that. But it also is, like, you know, willing to ask questions. And I just think, like, we've seen a whole bunch of, like, in the past few years, political documentaries that are, like, very celebratory and very hero worshipy, basically, from all different countries. And I just don't know, like, that's the vibe right now, to put it bluntly. Like, it's just, like, I just, like, don't think I have it in me to watch something like that right now. And something like this where it's, like, you know, it's not celebrating the man so much as, like, some of what he stands for, but then it's also, like, questioning the things that are bad, like, you know, the Nazis. And it's very fascinating. I think it's a really, really good template of what to do with the political documentary right now, and, like, how to avoid hero worship, essentially, with documentaries. And again, the footage, incredible. Some really stunning footage. I really liked it. I kind of think it might win. It might be just sort of, I mean, like, you know, it's about Russia, you know, which is very topical right now. It is, you know, very explicitly anti-Putin. It just feels like the sort of, maybe this is cynical of me to analyze the race in this way, but I just feel like it might be the case of right movie at right time, and it might win this race because of that. I think it's really interesting. It's very easy to watch. It's on, you know, HBO. I would not be surprised if it took it home. That being said, of these five, it's tough. There's a lot of really good ones. I would vote for All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, I believe. How do you break down this race?
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't mind almost any of them winning. Like, Fire of Love, I would balk at, and All That Breathes, I don't like as much. But realistically, most of them are solid enough that, like, you could justify it, frankly. Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a hard call for me because I can't decide whether I would rather have House Made of Splinters or Beauty and the Bloodshed win. You know, Bloodshed might get there, you know, there's a, if you want to talk about topicality, I mean, there's almost a sort of late breaking, like, question of like, we need to protect queer communities at this point. Fuck. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess voting's over or whatever, but still, like, I don't know. I just think any of these could be justified, but yeah, I think you're right that I think Navalny is probably the most accessible of the group, besides actually even more so than Fire of Love, I would say.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing, like, I hate to use this as the trimming off point, but if my parents were going to love one of these, it's Navalny. Like, where I'm like, oh, my parents who watch 60 Minutes, like it's fucking Game of Thrones every week, would absolutely go nuts for this one.
I mean, it's a truth universally acknowledged that parents love a procedural.
Yeah, exactly. So you're a documentary girly. Do you have any others you wanted to flag from this year?
Yeah, two. One is real, and then one is a joke. Let's do the real one.
What a great setup.
I'll do the real one, which we saw together, Second Chance. I actually am a little surprised it wasn't nominated because it's so good. Like, it's about the guy who essentially, like, invented a bulletproof vest. And you want to talk about a complex hero. Man, he's like an eccentric, interesting person, but he is not certainly hero worshipped in the film. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, the cops, history, iconography, race in it, in a way that, it, like, I was so impressed by. And I do think it has possibly one of the best things I've ever seen in a documentary, a film we, or a scene we talked about in another podcast, where there's a conversation between two people that I just literally never would have thought to, would happen, or B, that you could, that, like, I wouldn't even think of it as a documentarian, because I'm just like, no way it's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of the, it's memorable.
Sobbing.
In tears, yeah, in the theater together, like, incredible.
Yeah, we were sobbing. It was a collective cry. It was so shocking. And, like, it's like, talk about, like, delivering information in a really smart, peppy, interesting way that never, like, downplays any of the issues that are going on there, because boy, are there many. Yeah, I just thought that was such a good movie. Like, that's a kind of documentary, like, I, you know, documentary girly, there are many documentaries that I've watched, like, 10, 20, 30 times. So, like, that's the kind of one that if it were on TV, you'd be like, oh shit, Second Chance is on. And I would, like, ignore anything else. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need Shawshank Redemption again or something like that.
Absolutely. And, what is your joke one? I'm so excited.
Oh, I thought you had, I wasn't sure if you had one.
No, Second Chance is the only one I was going to flag.
Okay, cool. The joke one is one that, like, you know, realistically, you could probably guess if you've been listening to me be insane on these podcasts, but it's Those You've Known. The HBO documentary about Spring Awakening, which on some level I'm joking because it would just, like, complete the insane story arc of Lea Michele's comeback, because you could technically, this documentary is the beginning, right? It's the moment where people are like, she crazy, we'll just start accepting her again for some reason, right? But because of everything her and Jonathan Groff reveal is so unhinged about their relationship, it's just like, are these people, it's the most theater kid energy you've ever seen, and the whole movie is that. But I will say the thing my actual argument for it is that Spring Awakening is actually a musical I don't like. I'm not a huge fan. And I saw it with her in the original run before they won the Tony. And, you know, I was just like, what the fuck is this? And I saw, like, this is the first play I ever saw on Broadway, I think. And I it was like, you know, fucking August or September of the year I started college. And I was like, what the hell is this? I just didn't get it. I didn't get it. And I still don't really like it. And I didn't see the Deaf West production, which I heard was great, and that a lot of people who I know who also don't like the play really liked. So maybe I would feel differently. But, like, the fact that this movie actually made me feel for nostalgic and, like, appreciative of a musical I don't like really spoke to me to how good it is and, like, how much it expresses the love that people had for it in a way that makes it accessible to maybe someone who has never seen it or didn't like it. So I actually do think it's a really good documentary, honestly. I mean, there's some wild shit in it, obviously, but, I didn't see a lot of documentaries I loved this year, frankly. So it's one I would probably revisit. Actually, I have revisited clips of it, to be brutally honest, and I'm sure you can guess which pieces.
It contains the scene where Lea Michele describes showing her vagina to Jonathan Groff.
The lamp, yes, the lamp, the desk lamp.
Yeah, it is, you know, one of the best scenes of the year. The Frost Nixon of our time, basically. yeah, great movie. All right, where can people find more of your work, Marissa?
I'm at thepopbreak.com writing reviews occasionally, and then I'm at Marissa Carpico on all the remaining social media I still have.
I am on Letterboxd at Matt T and serialized at Matt on FU1. All right. Thanks for listening.